Ian Lynch is talking about Open Document. Clutch. Alex Hudson is talking about Hula. Martin Vogel is talking about the BBC Action Network.
Rice and pee.
Trisha. Obviously.
In the jungle, the mighty jungle, the lion sleeps tonight.
Season 3, episode 10.
Is that Creative Commons?
Wherever the hell that was.
Well, you know, it's how creative juices flowing.
Okay.
You know, nothing like sitting in a room with three of your mates and getting your juices flowing.
Nice.
I'm Matthew Revell.
I'm Aid Bradshaw.
I'm John O'Bacon.
And I'm Stuart Langridge.
Welcome to Lug Radio. What are we talking about this week?
What episode is it again?
Season 3, episode 10.
Oh, incidentally... happy
2 years! 2 years!
Oh, get
happy
in!
We've done it. To us.
2 years, unbelievable.
Yeah, we were podcasting before you, Adam Curry.
And do you know, Mr. Ben started listening to us just before his birthday and actually remembered it, and he said, you know, he couldn't believe it. 2 years, unbelievable, isn't it?
Wicked.
Good one. Fantastic.
And so, thank you for joining our community.
Everyone, what are we going to speak about? Send your happy birthday messages to showatlugradio.org.
I believe you're going to speak to somebody at Sun.
Sun!
Yep. About their open source strategy.
Sonny Bono. Simon Phipps.
We are, yep. We're going to speak to...
Chris Messina
from Flock.
Yes. Yep.
We're going to talk about the lesser of the two evils.
Yes.
Yep.
And we're going to talk about XGL and proprietary drivers.
And let's not forget we need to go for a ride on the What the Fook Book True.
Fantastic.
I'll tell you what, there's something exciting happening on the 23rd and 24th of July at University Union.
And the 22nd and the 23rd.
Really? Yeah.
Ignore what Matt says. It's the 22nd and the 23rd of
July. Sometime in July. Yep.
And we'll be telling you more about Lug Radio Live at the end of the show.
Mm. Let's go. In the past, we've talked about Windows and Mac OS X. And in a discussion on the way here in the car with Aid, we were talking about whether Mac OS X or Windows, which one is kind of the lesser of the two evils. So we thought this would make an interesting
segment. I wonder if the
world
can guess what my opinion was.
What could it be? So go on then, Aid. Give us your view
of the world. See, the discussion went along the lines of, well, you know, that you've moved over to Mac OS X now because it's less evil. And my question was, how on earth do you think that it's less evil? Because... the whole thing with Mac OS X is they make out like they're the good guys. You know, we're not evil Microsoft proprietary bollocks.
I don't think they make that out.
We're just Mac OS X proprietary bollocks instead. So, surely, at least Microsoft have no pretensions. They don't try and pretend that they're not, you know...
Can I give you a...
When have Apple started saying that they're not proprietary?
That's the kind that...
That's a perception that some people might peddle, but Apple don't.
I don't think Apple have ever officially said we're not proprietary.
They haven't exactly... refuted it though.
Oh, well, I haven't refuted that I'm green.
more to the point, I mean, you know, while I don't particularly like Microsoft, you don't see them going out to people in the street and going, we do proprietary stuff. Ah!
But they don't front as though they don't, if you know what I mean.
Well, what about
whereas Apple users say, oh, yeah,
Darwin.
What about
massive distinction there. I'm quite prepared to believe that you can accuse Apple users of going, well, you know, we do some open sourcey things, because look, there's Darwin and everything. Apple users do that, but not Apple.
Right.
Yeah.
You're accusing actual Apple of doing it, which I don't think they do. I think Apple users do it all the time, and the smug orange sunglasses.
What I'm saying is, can I spring forward and defend it?
Hey, can I give my defence as to why I think Mac OS X is
less evil?
Let's call
it Mac OS 10.
Oh, no, because that's what you're actually supposed to call it, isn't it? If you call it Mac OS X, you offend all the Mac users.
Plus, you can tell it's called Mac OS X because there's a bloody great big X in front of
the I'm Roman. It's 10.
I can just feel the emails coming towards us.
Roaring towards it. It's 10, don't you know?
All coming
10,000 people in tiny orange sunglasses.
Going,
typing on their pathetic white keyboards. Looking for a fucking hash key that they're never, ever going to find.
But when they click send with their fucking one mouse button, they'll go... because that will sum up all of their emotions.
I tell you, true story, right? What fucked me off the other day...
Go for it.
I've moved to Mac OS X for Lug Radio for recording it.
Hey! We've come out! We've come out!
You've got loads of people pissing themselves laughing here, going, hang on, so we've been bitching at him for ages to move away from Windows, and now he's moved to the fucking Mac OS.
That's right.
Oh, by the way... it's Unix and Darwin.
Yeah. Next!
Oh, by the way, we're still recording in Cubase.
Anyway,
what's the fucking point? Anyway, I was installing all the software the other day, and as you can see on this machine, there's no eject button.
Right.
Because, you know, an eject button,
an
eject button is unfashionable, isn't it?
That's right, yeah.
So I was thinking, okay, well, there's going to be...
You're not really helping your case here, really, are you?
Well, no, but that's not the point. Anyway...
I think it is the point, isn't it?
I went into the Finder, and I was thinking, okay, that's normally where the CD drive icon is.
Clearly, yeah.
And it wasn't in there. So I was like, okay, where do I find it? And I looked around, and I couldn't find an eject button. What do? You press that button on the keyboard.
Well, do you not drag it to the trash? Do you not get the CD and drag it to the trash?
There was no CD on there in the first place because I couldn't put a CD in the drive.
So just remind me why Apple aren't, it's a slide out drawer.
Yeah,
because they used to just be a slot like the one in my car.
Exactly. Yeah. No.
So you put a CD in.
So why aren't OS X?
I think slide out drawers are
Windows
now cool. It's old tech, isn't it?
Oh, right.
Anyway, the point I was going to make was that Mac OS X, I think, is... it's still proprietary. It's still bad. We don't like proprietary software, admittedly.
It's got we as in the three of us, presumably, not the one of you.
Fuck off.
Hang on, I haven't declared anything yet.
Anyway, right? The thing with Windows is that it's entirely proprietary, the whole shebang, right? Whereas at least Mac OS X is built on the Darwin core.
Yeah, but all they've done there is just stolen the early people's hard work because they needed a kernel, right?
It's not exactly stealing when it's adhering to their licensing agreement.
Granted.
And it's not as if Apple haven't given anything back, because Apple have given open source code back.
Yeah, did they give you an eject button? Did they fucking buy it?
Here's the thing, right?
Yeah, but how many years have we...
You always talk about usability, right? How usable is not having a fucking eject button and having to look for five minutes to try and... I never said that it was
perfect. Doesn't make it worse than Windows.
It does make it worse.
You're just Apple-a-phobic.
Yeah, you just hate Macs for the sake of it.
I just don't think that they're all that compared to Microsoft.
Never said that, but what we're talking about is the lesser of the two. The reason why I've moved to Mac OS X...
People perceive them as less evil.
The reason why I've moved to Mac OS X is because it's a lot more stable than Windows.
How many times did Windows ever crash on us?
A few times.
While we were recording Lug Radio?
No.
None.
But I do other stuff on my box other than Lug Radio.
Right.
And Windows had problems with that. I never put anything on the Windows machine other than Cubase.
Okay.
Because I knew that it was going to fuck the machine up. Mac OS X is more stable in that regard.
Just remind me why you were on your knees just before you recorded this segment. Was it because there's only one fucking USB port on the front of that £2,500 worth of equipment there? One fucking USB port.
So
which has got the fucking stupid mouse plug into it?
How does this affect how evil they are?
Well, they fucking are evil, because they choose...
It was only a few years ago that you used to put a floppy disk into a Linux machine. You had to manually mount it. That's not particularly
good,
is it?
Proper man's work, that is.
Listen, Adrian Chamberlain, you're just a Microsoft apologist.
So, what do you guys think?
I just think at least they're more upfront about it.
So, I think Mac OS X is less evil. Aid thinks it's more evil. What do you guys think about it?
I don't think there are gradations of evil in this. I don't like Windows because it's proprietary, and I don't like Mac OS X because it's proprietary. I'm the first to admit that Windows is a lot more usable than Linux in some areas, and Mac OS X is a lot more usable than Linux in some areas, and I think Linux is better.
Do you think Windows or OS X is more usable, by the way? I'd be interested in that one.
I haven't got enough OS X experience.
I mean, judging by this how to eject the drawer from the software.
There's one other thing.
There is a difference. There, you're talking about walk-up usability, which is not necessarily the same thing as using it on a long-term basis.
See, that's really usable, where your screen just completely turned off halfway through recording this segment.
Hang on.
See, now...
Bear with me. The point about it is, I agree that if you're used to the Windows way of doing things, that doesn't seem logical. But if you'd done nothing but Macs all your life, right, if you'd only ever used the Mac, and you tried to eject the thing, someone would say, no, there's a button on the front of the drive, and you go... Why?
Hey, the other
the other thing to bear in mind is that when I'm talking about this, the lesser of the two evils, I'm not taking usability into it at all. I'm taking into.
Well, you fucking should.
No.
I'm taking into account it's
not to do with evility, though, is it?
Evility.
Yeah, the evility is to do with whether it's proprietary, their attitude to the fact that Microsoft have fucked a lot more people in the arse than Apple have. That's the kind of thing that we're
choosing form over function is just as evil.
And who says it's form over function? Apart from
clearly,
see, that's the problem. You can't. There's always been this argument about form versus function. Whereas
one mouse base, button, form people, over people function. No hash key, form over function. No eject button, form over function.
Well, I'm sure that people can list a reel of problems that with Linux. But just because it's open source, we can say, oh no, it's all right.
Because its heart's in the right place.
Listen, Roy.
The thing is, I'm not talking about usability. A lot of people bang on about
how you're discounting the fact that the Mac is less usable.
I'm totally discounting.
Why are you doing that?
I'm talking about...
Are Linspire evil in terms... Because, I mean, they're good usability. And is their heart in the right place? I don't know. I mean, they're using an underlying Linux core, just like macOS are.
They're not doing... Well, they are doing stuff that's proprietary, I guess. But, yeah, not really thought
about. I mean, I'm not clear the difference between Linspire and macOS X. Now, on the first day, I don't particularly like Linspire for their proprietary stance. I think they're doing some genuinely good work. And they do... And they have a quite usable Linux system for their market. And Kevin Carmody came on here and was very honest about what their market was.
He was indeed. Yeah,
I agree.
And I've got a lot of respect for that. I don't personally like it because it's doing a load of proprietary stuff, and the fact that it's Linux under the covers doesn't bother me. And Mac OS X, I feel exactly the same way. But I don't think Mac OS is any more evil than Linspire for that, or any less evil than Linspire for that, particularly. I mean, you can say, well, you can install Debian packages on Linspire, but you can quite happily install Linux stuff on Mac OS X.
I
don't know.
I
mean,
I think comparing Linspire and Mac OS X is totally different. Because
why?
Although Linspire they ship some proprietary bits and pieces, like Click and Run.
Click and Run's about the only thing.
But apart from that, it's pretty much all free software. And as they've already said, that they contribute to free software in great amounts. So in that regard, I'd say that there's a hell of a difference. The thing that I don't get from Aid's opinion is I could understand you having your view if you were Richard Stallman.
Right.
But you work in Windows all day, which is proprietary software. So how can you have such
a
rabid view about one proprietary software but another? That's surely hypocritical.
No, I'm sure we've had this discussion before.
Have we?
Yeah, we have.
Once
many times. Yeah.
But you never actually explained yourself.
I have, more than one occasion.
Yourself.
Explained
Bullshit.
Myself. There's nothing wrong with proprietary software, which is why I've got no problem with Windows.
I'm going to cut that out and put that at the beginning.
There isn't. I've got no problem with it. I mean, I'd prefer to use non-proprietary software, and I choose it every single time. However, what I've just got a big bugbear with is people who try and trade as, look, we're really cool, we use open source software, when really it's just a proprietary operating system.
So what your grit is then with people is
pretending to be one thing when you're the other.
It's not Apple. You're just talking about
it's not
fickle people.
It's not Apple and it's not Mac OS X, it's the opinion they've managed to instill in other people who will then turn around and preach.
Are you telling me
to you
that that's not their marketing machine?
No, I agree it's their marketing machine.
Okay.
And to be honest with you, I'm sort of with Aiden this in that I'm bloody sure that there are people at Apple who wanted to put exactly that opinion
exactly.
into people's minds.
Totally, God. I agree with you. Agree with you.
Hang on a minute. This is
Apple. I don't think Apple have ever come out and said, no, we're open source stuff, we're not proprietary. I don't think they've ever said that.
Where's your evidence for that?
No. Apple have never said that. Apple have been very clear themselves. They're all proprietary.
Yeah.
But I believe that the reason a lot of people have got this view that it's kind of okay and kind of a halfway house between the two is because Apple have put it there in their minds. I've got no evidence for that.
That's
and
in
and
the
I
same way
wrong.
That Bishop... The Bishop of wherever believes in God, and that's a fairy tale as well.
There's no evidence for that, is there? No, basically, that's my opinion. That's why I get so wound up. It's because I just don't like things trading as one thing when they're something else. If you're proprietary, fine, but just...
So what you're talking about is honesty.
Yeah.
Honesty in how a company projects itself. And you're defending Microsoft over Apple.
Yeah, man.
I'm just saying Apple are no better than Microsoft, is what I'm saying.
I'm not saying that Apple... Well, that's why I disagree. That isn't what the question is.
That isn't the way it comes across from you, though, because often you get very heated. I don't know if it's a joke or not, but you do get very heated just by the fact that we're recording on OS X now instead of Windows. You'd much rather we're running on Windows.
I would.
But why? I don't understand.
This is more honest.
You've just said that
bullshit.
If you're going to use Cubase, then just use Cubase.
You know that I'm not using Mac OS X for any other reason than it's the best technical solution that I'm after, right? At the moment.
I believe that's...
Okay?
You know
that I'm not going to go around saying, yeah, I'm using Mac OS X because I'm open source, okay?
Right.
I'm using it because it's the best technical solution that I've got at the moment for doing audio. So why are you annoyed at me using Mac OS X? I can understand if there's some orange sunglasses kilt-wearing lunatic, I can understand that, but surely...
I'm just concerned that you might turn into an orange sunglass kilt wearing lunatic. His whole career is based on not being one, and I really don't ever want to see you in a kilt.
My entire career is based upon open source. I'm never ever going to move over to this.
He can't afford to.
Well, that's it. I mean, I'd have to start from scratch. You know,
I just don't see the difference. Why we're moving from Windows Cubase to OS X Cubase? I don't see what that gives us.
There's a better machine.
There's a number. And when you say it's because it's less evil, I'm like, well, in what way?
That's not the reason.
That's what you said in the car. No. You said it's less evil.
No, I said
it's not less evil.
I said the reason why I made the move was for a technical reason, but. And you said you shouldn't be using Mac OS X. And I said, well, I don't see a problem with Mac OS X because it's less evil than Windows. That's the point I said.
Yeah, but in
I
no
didn't
way,
make the
it?
Move because it's less evil than Windows. I made the move because it's a better machine. Yeah. It's a better technical platform. It doesn't affect viruses, all that kind of stuff.
That's handy, isn't it?
interesting thing is, me personally, I see Windows and Mac OS X both being the other side of the line into evility just because they are proprietary.
Yeah. Yep.
And I have been accused more than once, with a certain amount of justification, of seeing things in entirely black and white terms and not being prepared to engage with
no.
the world.
No, I would never say that about you, Stuart.
But do you think that it can be drawn as that black and white? I mean, if Mac OS X isn't a middle ground between an entirely proprietary Windows and entirely non-proprietary Linux, what is the middle ground? Does such a thing exist?
Here's the thing, we live in
an
analog
world. Linux itself.
We don't live in a digital world.
Sorry to dive in there, but Linux itself.
But you're going to anyway.
Go on.
Yes, I am going to anyway.
Do you go first?
Well, Linux itself isn't entirely non-proprietary by the time you've put the stuff that you need on it.
Exactly. My Linux machine is entirely non-proprietary.
Graphics drivers?
Yep.
Really?
I've got an Intel card.
Ah, okay.
And Intel aren't evil.
Intel are evil, but that's a hardware thing which we've talked about before. I am using open source drivers. My machine is entirely, as far as I'm aware, open source.
Matt,
software.
Your point.
Yeah, I was going to say, what are you saying, Matt?
I don't see that we can just see everything as either or. You know, everything in life, and totally. I know you're not going to say it, I know you're going to disagree with this, but just about everything in life is a compromise, and you can choose to compromise or you don't. And for this, you're compromising, and that's fine. And to my mind, I think evil is the wrong word here, really. That's the way I see it. And I know we've had this discussion in a previous episode.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I think we're getting a bit...
I think, yeah, I mean...
too much saying it's evil. I mean, for fuck's sake, it's an operating system, and it's a bit different to Windows. It's not Linux, it's not free.
I don't see it as black and white either. I mean, at the end of the day, yes, it's Mac OS X. Yes, portions of it are
you should
proprietary.
Call it 10, by the way, or else they're going to get upset.
Portions of it are proprietary. Portions of it aren't proprietary. And that's the way it is. So I don't think it can be 100% black and white because portions of it are open source. But it depends on... It seems that the viewpoint for a lot of people, and I suspect this is with ACK and AID, is that if you have 100% something that's open source, right, and then you change 10% and make 10% of it proprietary, it basically soils the entire thing.
I take roughly the... You know how the kernel developers say, and the kernel's open source, and if you plug in one proprietary driver, it taints the kernel?
Yep.
Yep. So at that point, they'll go, we won't help you, even if the problem is in something completely unconnected with your driver. They can't know that because you're using a proprietary thing, and so you've tainted the entire kernel. That's pretty much how I feel about it. I mean, I'm not quite that dogmatic about it.
Yeah.
But sometimes I think I'd like to be. And a lot of people think that's bad.
Hi, it's Matthew here from Lug Radio with the other guys. Hey. Jono, Aid, and
Hello.
Stuart. Chris, you're a Chris Messina from Flock. Can you tell us basically what Flock's about and what your involvement is?
Sure. So Flock's an open source web browser that's based on Firefox, and we're building a bunch of cool stuff on top of that platform that really try to make using the web socially a lot easier. Building in tools like RSS reading and blogging, Flickr sharing, photo sharing in general, and things like that, really trying to re-examine the fundamental notion of what the web's about and realizing that it's much more social. And so building a browser more or less from the ground up, designing it to respond to those needs that aren't being met by current tools, and building it in such a way that there's a unified experience that, you know, using 50 extensions is not necessarily going to get you.
Right.
So my job actually at Flock is sort of in flux. It's changing a little bit, but primarily my job has been the director of experience, and to also serve as an open source ambassador. And what that means is that I do a lot of design, usually mock-ups and thinking through feature sets and feature flows and how people actually will use this thing. And then the other part of my job is to go out and talk to other projects like WordPress or Drupal, other open source projects, and you know, figure out what the hell they're up to and figure out ways that they could actually work with Flock to get their stuff in the Flock so that we can promote them and then create sort of a nice ecosystem where, at least, you know, in my thinking, everybody benefits.
Cool.
And open source actually, you know, advances into the, to a much larger and much broader audience.
Right. Okay, cool. The first time I heard about Flock, I have to admit, I didn't really get it. I used it today and I actually really liked it. So I have to go back on my assertion that it was like a bunch of cats tied together.
Backpedal, 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 backpedal.
I'm backpedalling because I have now actually used it, and I speak, and now I speak from experience.
What have a job?
So, what's what? I mean, who's behind Flock? What's, you know, what's in it for you guys?
Spock.
Well, I mean, there are a couple things. You know, like the core team that started out. Was pretty small. Bart DeCreme came from Mozilla. He sort of led a lot of the Firefox 1.0 launch and did a lot of like the legal stuff there, and, worked with me. And actually, that's where I got involved in this on the project called Spread Firefox.
We've heard of it. I think we may have heard of that one. Yeah.
Yeah. We were both admins on that project, and so, anyways, we're, you know, trying to figure out what to do next. Bart basically said to me, "Hey, you know, we're starting the startup. Do you want to do some consulting for us?" And I was like, okay, you know, I was working for another open source project called Civic Space at the time, and I was like, okay, you know, I'll do that in my spare time. And, you know, sooner or later, like, we basically, like, all sat down together, and we're like, all right, what should we build? And originally, we're like, well, let's build a bunch of extensions that really set the bar and do some really, really cool things. And so we were going down that path, like, we had, like, an antivirus extension, an anti-phishing extension. We actually had a Delicious extension that we were building, and... you know, as we were building, we just kind of realized that doing all these things hodgepodge or whatever just didn't make sense, because the open source community is always going to be able to innovate, you know, really quickly on these small fragmented pieces of the browser. And it would be very hard for us to tell a compelling story about what we're doing if we have, you know, 80 extensions under our holster that we all have to maintain and try and figure out how the hell they all, you know, intermingle.
So
at that point, you know, this meeting, we're like, well, listen, like, what would it mean if we actually, you know, took the Firefox, like, code base, which is a great platform to build on, and let's start to think about, well, how are people really using the browser differently today that when it was designed, you know, 10 years ago, and you had the idea of history and bookmarks and the current page that you're viewing as your entire browsing experience, what are things that people are doing today that the browser isn't doing? Let's build around those fundamentally.
Okay, I mean, one of the trends we've seen reasonably over the last few years is for applications to move more and more onto the web. But isn't Flock a big step backwards? Because now if I want to do this, I have to use Flock. I mean, theoretically, I can go to all the individual sites as I would do at the moment with Firefox.
Goatsy.cx.
But isn't this now a step back? Because now you're saying to people, instead of using any browser you like, you've got to use Flock for this stuff.
Right, so there's two things. And that's a terrific point. But I think actually that point actually justifies what I'm about to say. And that's, first and foremost, you know, Firefox is cross-platform. So that gives us a tremendous base for you to, let's say, be using, you know, Linux at home, and then, if you have to, Windows at work. Or, you know, for me, it's a Mac, and I carry it around wherever I go, and then occasionally, you know, I have to hop on a PC to test things out or whatever. But being able to have that cross-platform stuff is really good, right? Because all web pages will work on all the different operating systems. But having one browser that works, well, I guess two in this case, Firefox, that work across platform, is useful to have a consistent experience. Now, the second thing that's useful, and this is where it starts to change, is that if you're really going to start to have something like an internet operating system where most of your applications are delivered through web pages and websites, you're still going to need something on the other end to manage all of those connections, you know? And if you look at even all the little Ajax apps that are coming out now, they all have different paradigms for interface. So what we're trying to say is that, you know what, there's going to be some fundamental things that we believe are going to be core to the browsing experience over the next 10 years. Some of those things being, you know, publishing, whether it's video or audio or blogging, then consuming syndicated content, whether that's RSS or ATOM, OPML, or microformatted content, and then... you know, basically sharing and publishing favorites and things like that, things that you're interested in, your attention stream. So if you can actually leverage that in one interface, in one unified interface, on every platform, and then eventually start syncing your whole profile, you log into that profile through, it could be another browser, or it could be Flock. And then when you're in your Flock, then you get a whole richer experience that actually, you know, learns and grows.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, I mean, one other thing to bring up, which is not actually my accusation, it's something I saw someone else make on some blog somewhere on the internet, was
Peter, less specific.
It doesn't give you the option of plugging into all your favourite apps. It only gives you the option of plugging into all your favourite apps if you use all the trendy apps of the day. You know, so it works fine with Flickr, but it won't work with the gallery on my website, for example. And if I'm if I want a browser that plugs into my gallery rather than the trendy Flickr that everyone's using, I'd have to write my own anyway, and Flock's no benefit.
You want them in
a
stick.
Is that a reasonable... I mean, I haven't used it in any great depth, so is that a reasonable criticism or totally unreasonable and they haven't used it properly?
That's a reasonable question to ask, and we have a reasonable response.
fair play. That's, fancy
okay, that's not really an informed impression. And the reason why that is because we're actually, and this is fundamental to my core beliefs about what we're doing, is that we have to work with everybody, and we have to play nice.
Yeah.
And it's not just a matter of play nice, but we have to go out of our way to actually support and encourage the success of other projects. Our success, fundamentally, because we're based on web services, depends on other projects.
Hmm.
So we are actually, you know, more tied to the overall worldwide community than any other browser, right? I mean, like, yeah, you can, like, you know, publish bad HTML or whatever, and maybe your site won't work, but it's very different when we're actually publishing photos to you.
Yeah.
So, for example, in terms of photo sharing, we're going to be adding a number of services. And a long time ago, I actually posted on my blog, you know, the best thing that the gallery people could do is basically clone the Flickr API. And then you can literally use the Flock top bar to upload photos and browse photos from gallery. That's all you have to do.
Okay, yeah.
You know, so we actually want to work with as many different apps as possible. Because, you know, the whole thing that got me into Mozilla and spreading Firefox in the first place was about having choice in the web.
Yeah.
And we're trying to extend that even further and saying, use whatever web service you want. We're going to try to build a unified browsing experience around those services so that you can pick and choose and not, you know, store your data all in one place, but that you can actually move your things around and have some leverage as a consumer.
Cool. Okay. Just to wrap up, you're talking about leverage and the Flock project and everything.
Yep.
How do you reckon you're going to make money out of it, or is that not a primary concern at the moment?
Well, I think that first and foremost, we want to get out there and do something new, right? We want to ask a lot of questions. We want to say, you know,
many questions.
What can we do with the browser to really make it more accessible to a wider audience so that a lot more people are starting to engage in the online social space and the online conversations?
Right.
That's sort of fundamental to our core. And if we do that well, I think the business will follow.
Okay, okay.
To answer your question more directly, it's a very similar model to all the other browsers that are out there that are, you know, free or recently free. And that's that the browser comes with certain defaults, which in my think are kind of like, you know, oceanfront real estate. And they bring with them a certain accessibility and visibility to people using the browser. So that would be, for example, the search box or the homepage. And those things are worth, you know, people paying for to get there as the default when the browser ships.
Right.
It's that simple.
Yeah. Okay. Just one very final question. Why, just out of interest, have you chosen the Yahoo as your default search instead of, say, Google or MSN or someone else? Just interesting.
Well, I mean, the best way to answer that, I think, is to look at who those companies are already aligned with.
Right.
You know, I mean, Microsoft has a browser. Google does a lot of work with, you know, Mozilla. And Yahoo's got to have a friend, too. So,
okay.
I mean, I'm not the one who's in all these deals and stuff. Yeah. But, I mean, that's kind of the way that I see it breaking down.
Cool. Nice one. Well, Chris Messina from Flock.com, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much.
You know, it was about time that we got the true story of Flock. So
it's
going
to be interesting to see how it develops.
Yeah. That's actually, you know, just one more thing. We just put out the 0.5.11 release, like, the other day. So
right.
What's the URL?
You know, the hypersite thing you guys did a while ago. The latest release, actually, I think, addresses a number of those, you know, hype questions.
Okay.
I would encourage you guys to just, you know, go give it another look if you have already and weren't so impressed the first time over.
Cool. So Christmas. Do you think it's hype or shite?
Right now, you know, I think we've got a long way to go to actually put down on our vision, but it's getting a lot closer to being, like, you know,
not
the real deal.
So excellent.
We're totally open to feedback, and we want to basically build the best tool that we can, and work with all the Firefox extensions and all that stuff. So,
superb. Thanks very much for coming to us.
Thanks a lot. Bye bye.
Okay.
Was ein Fuck! Bogentrug.
Welcome. Otherwise known as the What the Fuck Book Truck.
No, the What the Fuck Boot Truck.
Book Truck.
I'm leaving.
You say it now.
No, absolutely not.
Hey, it's What the Fuck Book Truck.
Okay.
Book Truck. Good Lord. Hey, Book Truck.
Hockey, Book Truck High.
I wanted to call it Book Review.
Okay, bear with me for a minute. Bear with me, Book Truck.
Where's Tom Paulin?
Hey.
Nothing.
What the fuck
is that? It's a news not review joke.
I use that on my car. Ah. Bit of tarpaulin.
Anyway.
Yep.
So, need it. I believe it's my turn this time.
It is your turn.
Go for it.
I've picked a book.
What the fuck is it?
Climb upon Jono's knee and let him tell
it
you
about
it.
It is called The Design of Everyday Things by Donald Norman.
And this is a book related to open source?
No. Well, yes. It's kind of...
I'm sensing no.
It's related to open source about the same as the cuckoo's egg.
Right.
It's related to the open source mentality and way of doing things.
But it's not specifically related to
it. Wait to hear mine.
The Design of Everyday Things is the book on good
design,
usability.
For everyday
things. It's written by a guy called Don Norman. And it's mm-hmm. just fascinating. It really is. Because he writes it in such a way that... You don't have to be a usability expert to understand it.
Right.
And he just looks at... He takes everyday objects and looks at them and tears them open and gets an understanding and disproves the kind of things that you assume. So, for example, he proves why a door is an unusable object and why the old phones were better objects than we've got today and things
like that. Give us an example. The door one sounds interesting.
Yeah, I mean, for example, he says
that... Stops you going through a space. That makes it unusable.
He says, you know, with a door, you've got to figure out essentially two things. You've got to... Which side the hinge is on mm-hmm. and whether you push it or pull it.
Right.
And a lot of doors, he said, you know, a lot of doors have got like a flat panel on it, so that you can't grab anything there, so you've got to push it.
Yeah.
Whereas increasingly, we've now got doors which have got sticky out handles that you've got to push.
Right.
So he's saying that that's where, you know, the whole form versus function thing. And he takes things like that, and he's got examples of, like, where in some German museum somewhere, I think it was, somebody got trapped in between two sets of glass doors because they couldn't figure out how to open them. and he, you know, he talks about things like, it's absolutely fascinating. It's one of those things that I think even if you're not necessarily interested in usability, you could read it and just think, oh, I never thought of that way.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think every software designer should...
Sounds fascinating.
It does sound fascinating, but isn't it taking it a bit too far?
No,
going on about doors?
No, not at all.
Absolutely not. I mean, the thing that I found really illustrative about it is that I thought usability is very important, and I agree that it is important, and complicated things need usability.
Yeah.
But it never really occurred to me that you need to think about these kind of things for doors. I mean, a door's
non-complicated things. Yeah,
it's just a big plank of wood and that with a hinge on, and that's it. And you read it and you think, God, yeah. I mean, the old phones example Jono mentioned, you remember the big old phones with the prongs that went up around where the receiver goes?
Yep.
And you think, God, they were old and clunky.
Old and clunky.
Your
example
of a phone. But when you look at them, the example he gave was that if it falls off the table, the prongs stop it hanging up.
Yeah.
Which means that you can knock it off the table, it doesn't hang your call up. And you think... Oh, God, yeah, I'd never thought of
that. I'm pretty sure that no one thinks of that until they read that book. I don't believe everybody's thought, oh, those prongs are there for a reason.
Yeah.
Yes, it's kind of... I thought
it's just to hold the actual handset in place.
No, that's the point, because it does both.
Yeah.
Then it's unclear to me whether the original phone designers actually thought of this, or whether they didn't think of it and it was a happy fallout.
I was going to say, it's hard to think it's a coincidence.
One of the things that he goes over and over about in the book is that... You can, if you sit down and think about these things, if you try and put usability things in, you find a lot of other useful stuff just kind of falls out of the design. So it's there and it works really well if you stop with a few basic assumptions.
There's a few reasons why the book is good, I'd say. First of all, it's filled with examples. It's filled with case studies. It's not like it's not just spurting usability theory and not backing it up. So it's interesting to read. So he teaches you, for example, about discoverability, which is one of the concepts of usability. And then he'll outline that with an item. He hates phones for some reason. So usually phones are an example of bad design.
Okay.
But he outlines it. And the thing is, I think you can read that book and you can take kind of some usability golden rules away with you.
Yeah.
So when you're looking at interfaces and when you're thinking about interfaces, you can run them through like a test in your head. So it's useful in that. And the other thing, it's just really well written. I mean, the guy is just unbelievably, you know, he's
literate.
He's very literate, yeah. He's a great writer. And the only problem with it, I'd say, is that it gets a little heavy in the middle of the book where he talks about memory.
Right.
Because it gets a bit biological for a while. And I found myself...
Oh, yeah, biological in your ass.
I found myself sort of...
Biodegrading.
Biodegrading, yeah.
Biled
just
up.
Just battling through that little bit.
There's a bit where, the bit John was talking about, he spends some time explaining a bit about the theory of how memory and stuff like that works. And therefore, you know the whole, you can remember 7 plus or minus 2 things.
Yep.
He spends a bit of time going to all the theory behind that before showing how it applies.
Right.
But I'm not clear there's a much better way of doing it. Because if he just said... you need to set it up so people will do this because that's what they remember and not backed it up, then people would have gone, well, you've just said that, why should I believe you? So you've got to show it, but I'm not clear you could have shown it in a much clearer way.
Yeah.
Sure.
You've
got to basically grab that kind of thing with both hands. But to be honest with you, what you do is you read it once and then you go, okay, I believe Don Norman knows what he's talking about. So now I'll just take the bit at the end of the chapter which explains what to do and not really care about why.
Yeah.
I mean, all really good. I mean, you probably find Seth Nichols every day before he goes to bed.
Yeah.
And he understands the theory behind it. That's why he can come up with great new designs. But for people like us who aren't great designers and aren't going to be great designers, you just take the things that he's illustrated and put them into the things you're designing, whether they're doors or software or whatever, and they'll be that little bit better.
It's the thing is, as well, is that, I mean, I've read sort of 3 or 4 usability books, and it's just the
that makes you an expert then.
No.
Were you having trouble sleeping?
No.
Oh, right.
And it's the most accessible of the lot of them. I mean, user interface design for programmers,
it's the most accessible accessibility book.
Is good, and it's a good introduction, but it's a little limited. Whereas, you know, that specifically looks at software, and it's kind of like usability within a vacuum, whereas the Don Norman thing is great to read after it. So you read about software in a vacuum, and then you read the Don Norman book, and it shows you about everything. The problem when you read this book, and it is a problem, is that you find yourself analysing everything. I was taking pictures of things with my digital camera, like Susan's temperature controls in her Fiesta. because, you know, there was bad design in there. I was thinking, I'm going to note this down. And you just find yourself analysing and overanalyzing everything.
Sure, that's a good thing.
It isn't.
It's not if you're taking photos of your girlfriend's car's temperature control.
I wonder what you can say then, Matthew.
More to the point, it opens your eyes to how you live in a world of unusable and feature-poor devices.
It frustrates you.
And it's very sad because you spend the whole day walking around going, but that could be better and that could be. And everything you see annoys you because it's shit and complicated.
But surely seeing
it. And I wish I'd been left in ignorance sometimes.
But surely seeing it, you're one step closer to fixing it.
Yeah.
I'm never going to fix the heater controls in my car. They annoy the shit out of me all the time, and I know why they annoy the shit out of me now I've read Doe. It was originally called the something of everything.
Well, you could now write to Mercedes and say, oi.
The psychology of everything.
Yeah, at which point they'll just go, bugger right off.
The thing is, they'll go, bugger einen right and often.
To pick a silly example, the heating controls in my car, there are 5 basically identical buttons along the bottom, and there's not really any differentiation between them. Now, you can't spend a long time looking down at them, because then you're not looking at the road and you crash into a wall and die. So what I ought to be able to do is reach down and find the individual button that I want, but I can't do that.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of thing he talks about. You offset the buttons, or you raise the middle one, or so you can find...
Can you not just use a slider?
No, this is like to turn the air conditioning on and off, and to turn off one side or the other side of the heating. Yeah, I mean, conceivably, yes, you could use a rotary dial. And the controls in my old car were a lot easier to use.
Yeah.
And this kind of thing...
So your new car sucks, basically.
Design of everyday things opens your eyes as to why these things annoy you.
Sure.
And every developer who's listening to this, who cares about the interface, particularly GUI developers, needs to read it, because it'll make you a better developer, there's no doubt about it.
Fantastic.
Okay. On the phone now, we have Simon Phipps from Sun. How are you doing, Simon?
I'm alive and well down in Southampton, thank you.
Hooray. Fantastic. So, tell us what you do at Sun.
What do I do at Sun? I am Sun's chief open source officer.
Ooh, that sounds a flash title.
That means that I'm responsible for managing and coordinating Sun's open source software activities.
Right.
Open source Java.
time.
You probably haven't had people shout out open source Java all that often, I can imagine.
Well, that never happens.
So what kind of things are you working on at the moment?
What are we working on at the moment? I'm the chair of the Open Solaris Governing Board.
Ooh.
I've just got off a call with them where we've been defining the rules, the governance rules for the Open Solaris community.
Right.
I'm very interested in what's going on with open document format.
Okay.
I've been spending a lot of time thinking about that and looking at how it's being adopted in various local governments and other places.
Right.
I just got back from Malaga, where I was on a guru panel, which sounds very grand.
Fantastic.
The open source, or it was a fascinating conference there, actually. It was in Spanish. The name of the conference was the Software Libre Conference, which means free software, but in the English translation, in the small print at the bottom, said that it was the Worldwide Open Source Conference.
Oh. Nice translation.
Actually, you ought to give pause to people to check that the Spanish dictionary is actually not affected by Microsoft.
But very quick question. What do you run for your desktop, just out of interest?
I have two screens on here at the moment.
Ooh, so do I.
One is running some sort of Linux-based system. I think I've actually got Red Hat on there at the moment.
Hey.
And the other machine is a Mac, naturally running Unix.
Right. Ah, cool. So you're the head of Sun's open source. And one of the things that's kind of fascinated me since, Sun created OpenOffice out of StarOffice, and you guys recently have created Open Solaris out of Solaris. One of the things that I want to know, just what's the overview of Sun's open source / free software strategy?
Okay, so first thing you've got to be aware is that there's been a sea change in the company since the days of 2001, 2002.
Okay.
And so if you have folk memories of hearing people from Sun talking about Linux back in 2002, 2003, I suggest that you erase them from your memory.
Right.
If you're at all able to. the position that we're in now is we see that there's been a big change in the way that the world uses computing technology, mainly brought about by the Internet, that's connected everyone to everyone else. And that old models of how software is used and created are they're getting pretty long in the tooth.
Mm.
We think we're moving into an era where people will create software participatively in communities.
Yeah.
And so our strategy is to move all of our software development over to that participative development model.
Fantastic.
In terms of our software business, we are moving over to making the shift that I would describe as making money at the point of acquisition to making money at the point of value.
Ah, yeah.
So if you think about the way that software worked back in the days of mainframes, you used to get all the software with the mainframe.
Right.
And I remember when I started working in the computer industry in about 1985, what was going on was the big unbundling of software, where people started to get a choice about what software they ran on their computer.
Okay, yeah.
And at that point, right, software monetization moved from at the point of hardware acquisition to the point of software selection.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Right.
What I think is happening now is a shift from monetization of software at the point of software selection to the point of deriving value from the software.
That's a very interesting
perspective.
What does that
mean?
I think I vaguely understand what you're driving at there, but going back to something you said a minute ago, you said that you expect all of Sun software to move towards that collaborative model.
Yep.
Now, does that mean an open source model?
Yep.
So all of Sun software is going to be open source?
Yep.
All of
it. Yay.
Yep.
Is that your opinion or Sun's opinion?
keeping in mind that I...
Just like Wednesday or something. That'd be great.
Probably not by next week, I shouldn't think. It's a bit of a tight schedule. So the way that I look at doing this stuff, we take open source very seriously indeed. We know what's involved in taking an existing code base and contributing it to or creating around it an open source community.
No doubt.
We've actually done it a number of times now.
Exactly.
In some cases, like when our new Java DB product is actually Apache Derby, in packaged for
like a horse racing thing.
So we've in that case gone to an existing open source community and joined in with it and started using it for our product base.
Yeah, yeah.
In another case like Solaris, what we were actually doing was taking an internal open source like community inside Sun and opening it up for global participation. In the case of something like OpenOffice.org, what we did was we bought a proprietary software company and we created an open source community in the shape of OpenOffice.org around Star Division's product. So we've actually done it a number of times now, and we know that to do that takes a great deal of due diligence to make sure you actually have the legal right to do it. It takes a good deal of investment to make sure you have the software infrastructure to support a community.
It takes
a reasonable amount of personnel work to make sure that your staff are actually willing and able to make the transition from between the very different worlds of closed source and open source development.
Fair enough.
Yeah, I mean, that was... We
know what's involved in that, so what I'm doing is I'm not willing to say it will all be done by this date. But what I can tell you is that every single project is right now putting together their plan for how they're going to do it, and they're individually bringing them to me for review.
Okay.
I'm hoping that it's going to be sometime within the next 2 years that we'll see everything based either on a new open source community or an existing open source community. But an exact date, I'm twitchy about giving it to you.
Sure. I can understand that.
It's done when it's done, you know?
Okay, yeah.
I mean, something I was going to bring up, which you've at least partially already answered. Sun has tended to bounce in between an open source and a proprietary model. Originally, all the Sun hackers were free software hackers back then. And then it all went very proprietary, and now you're getting back into a free software model again. But the way you're going about it, you're not likely to have the option to switch back again after this. This is kind of a point of no return, because people can just keep the code,
even
if you decide to take it back proprietary. So how much discussion was there internally about making the... it seems to me like it's an irreversible step. Obviously I'm glad about this.
I agree with you. I think in practical terms it is an irreversible step. But we have seen a couple of companies that were open source, because they're the copyright owner, able to go proprietary again. But I really don't think that's an option for Sun. One of the interesting things that Scott McNeely tends to say, if you talk to him on this subject, is he thinks that we made a mistake by going proprietary in the 90s.
Right.
Yeah.
He regards it as a deviation off the path that Sun was on.
Sure, yeah.
And if you look at our very first product in 1981, it was commodity hardware running a free software operating system.
Right,
which sounds
okay.
Kind of familiar to today. The Sun as a company was a group of hackers that took a free operating system, built some commodity-based hardware, and created a new industry category. If you wanted to find out what today's open source companies are going to look like in 25 years' time, well, you know, Sun is an open source company that's 25 years old.
Right.
We did go through a period where we had more business than we knew what to do with in the late 90s and early part of this decade.
Yeah.
And we went off the rails, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
The problem that we faced was we had so much business coming in that we started hiring pretty much anyone that turned up at the door.
Can I have a job?
Because we needed people to handle all the administrative tasks of being a successful business.
Yeah.
And we hired a whole load of people who didn't share our values.
Just moving the discussion on slightly to OpenOffice. I mean, OpenOffice is obviously a major project which Sun are a major contributor to, and StarOffice is obviously an important product. I just want to ask, this question comes in two parts. The first part is, there's been some pressure for Sun to release the OpenOffice code in some kind of foundation. I don't necessarily want to know what Sun are going to do, but what your thoughts are on this. And the other thing is, there's been some discussion about the Open Document Fellowship versus the Open Document Foundation. And I was wondering which way you swing as well.
There's some interesting ground. When it comes to the foundation discussions, I'm a big fan of having an independent community around the OpenOffice.org code.
Yeah.
It was something that, I was actually at the launch of OpenOffice.org in Monterey in 2000.
Nice.
And I remember hearing Marco Boris announcing that the ultimate destination of the Star Division's code was going to be in a foundation.
Yeah.
Now, looking at where we are today, If you draw a list of the top 10 issues that the OpenOffice.org community has got to face, I don't think that very many of them are actually addressed by making the transition into a foundation right now. I think the issues it's got to face are the fact that the code is somewhat monolithic,
mm-hmm.
that it's that makes it tricky for there to be multiple commit points so that you can have multiple committers involved on the code base. I think
yeah.
that's the number one problem. I think that then there's the issue of the governance of the marketing community, the very vocal marketing community. There is the issue of the way that the architectural direction is taken. There's the issue of the how various programming language and VM technologies are going to be used and interfaced in with the technology. I actually don't, you know, as you look down that list, I don't think there's very many of them that are directly addressed by working on a foundation now.
Yeah.
And I've looked at what's involved in starting a foundation, and it actually involves getting lots of those problems solved first.
But do you believe? But do you believe that the perspective that we should take on OpenOffice, it sounds like what you're saying is that we should really take a community-driven perspective as opposed to a perspective driven by some core vendors such as IBM and Sun. So are you saying that everybody, it should be kind of like an independent side for both managing the OpenOffice code and the open document format?
So my general view about open source is that the people who contribute are the people who ought to get to call the shots on the future.
Yeah, yeah.
Sounds fair.
And if you look at who's contributing to OpenOffice.org, the top contributor by something like 75% of the contribution is Sun. The number right. two contributor is Novell. The number three contributor is a company called Propylon.
Yeah.
And then there's a pool of other significant and valuable, but nonetheless largely individual contributors below there.
Right, right.
So let's say that tomorrow we started an independent foundation where all the contributors got one vote.
Yeah.
It would still be Sun-controlled.
Yeah, yeah.
So I actually don't think that a shift in from a Sun-stewarded arrangement to a separate non-profit legal entity actually makes a lot of odds to the future of OpenOffice.
Right.
I think what really makes a difference is having the structure of the code and the structure of the community so that we can diversify the contributions that we're getting in. I think that's the real key.
That sounds right. legitimate.
Why did Sun spend a few million dollars on StarDivision, then open the code? I mean, I accept what you're saying about Sun always having been an open source company and, you know, maybe the path was diverted from slightly. But actually to go out and buy another company just so you can open the code, I mean, is that about grandstanding against Microsoft, or does it have genuine strategic relevance that will bring money in eventually from the new value, monetization section of things?
So the number one reason why Sun bought StarDivision in 1999 was because that at the time Sun had something approaching 42,000 employees.
Right.
And pretty much every one of them had to have both a Unix workstation and a Windows laptop.
Well, so yeah. It's cheaper to buy the company than
it was
buy...
cheaper to go buy a company that could make a Solaris and Linux desktop productivity suite than it was to buy 42,000 licenses.
That's incredible.
Fantastic. No way. Absolutely fantastic.
Now, once we'd acquired it, we then said, well, okay, what are we going to do with all this source code we've acquired? And it was a fairly easy decision then to say, well, let's create an open source community around it. One of the big surprises we had, actually, was once we had made the code free, and made the code free using a small and a big F,
yeah.
We discovered that most of the downloads were actually for the Windows version.
Ah, right.
We really hadn't expected to be the case. We'd heard rumors that there was this company in Redmond that had the market stitched up, and yet we found that over 60% of the downloads were for the Windows version of StarOffice.
Right, right.
And that began to clue us into the fact that there actually was a commercial opportunity here too. And that was where we then started to try and build a commercial activity around the investment. But the initial seed of the investment was we wanted a desktop productivity suite that would work on CDE or GNOME.
Okay, just moving over onto the state of Massachusetts very briefly. Before they made that decision to move to Open Document, was there much collaboration with Sun, and will there be much support afterwards?
So there wasn't a whole lot of collaboration with Sun at Massachusetts. I've actually just had a very enjoyable few days touring around Europe with Peter Quinn.
Right.
And it's very interesting talking one-on-one with Peter Green, because you discover that
he's actually a
very seasoned CIO, very used to working in corporate contexts. And all of his decision-making around ODF was based entirely on the needs and the value structure in the state of Massachusetts.
Yeah,
fantastic.
Yeah.
And the decisions that he made were all about managing Massachusetts money and managing Massachusetts long-term records retention policies in a smart
good for
way.
Him.
And he did all that from public information. He really didn't talk to us that much. Now, since that strategy became obvious, a number of Massachusetts companies, which does include Sun, because we have a very large facility in Burlington, just outside Boston, and a number of local companies have then joined in and supported Peter and latterly the state of Massachusetts in their decision making.
Right,
excellent.
Going forward, we're very strong supporters of the move towards ODF, naturally.
Yeah,
and we're continuing to give any support that the state of Massachusetts asks us for, and occasionally to interfere a little bit without them asking.
Yeah,
excellent. We're going to have to wrap up now, I'm afraid. But I mean, it's been a fascinating interview.
Yeah.
One thing just to finish on. Sun's, you know, you're saying going open source on just about everything. So, do you foresee a time where small business people could be running Sun software to run their business from, or even people at home could be?
Well, you know, one of the fascinating things about people who are running GNU Linux is that by the time that mouse pointer appears on the screen, arguably you've executed more software that Sun engineers are maintaining than any other single company.
Yeah.
Because interesting. We're actually the company that donated the accessibility framework to GNOME. We contributed the first 50 employees to Mozilla. We're hosting the X.org conference this year at our campus in Santa Clara because one of the leading committers on X.org is a Sun employee.
Yeah.
We're making contributions to Perl the whole time. You discover that a whole load of the software that people in their very relaxed fashion call Linux, in quote marks, is actually maintained by a very diverse and unexpected group of software developers.
Sun/Linux.
So there's a very strong sense in which lots of people who are using free and open source software to run their businesses are already running a lot of Sun software. For me,
right.
The question is, will Sun ever work out a business model that allows it to get revenue from those people? And I think that's a fascinating question.
Indeed.
For the next interview.
Yeah, well, we'd love to have you on again because it has been really interesting.
Most definitely.
And we'd be absolutely
honored.
Basically, we're doing a little thing called Lug Radio Live in the summer, where we have a few hundred Linuxy and open sourcey people come to
600.
They're all Sun people.
a bunch of Sun fans basically come along to Wolverhampton University, and we have a fun time with some talks and that. Would you be possibly free to do that? Do you reckon?
Or should we dates work? I'd love to. Yeah.
Excellent.
Nice one. Excellent. Thank you very much. And I suppose you say thank you to Sun for helping us out.
Thanks,
with,
Simon.
With Linux. Cheers.
Well, thank you for tolerating us.
Thanks very much.
Then. Thanks, Sam.
Bye.
Bye.
Recently, there's been a lot of press about XGL and the new 3D bling that we're getting on the open source desktop.
Gotta love it.
And there's also been some discussion about Fedora have created a similar kind of technology for their, which is slightly different.
Better.
AIGLX, Chris Waddle. And both of these technologies are pushing the 3D requirements for the desktop, and we largely, a lot of us, not all of us, a lot of us are using the proprietary NVIDIA and ATI drivers because the open source drivers are not as mature. So I was
very
thinking,
delicately put, by the way.
What you actually meant was not as good. I think you're allowed to say they're not as good.
All right, they're pretty shit. So, so the question is that first of all, is it right for us to depend on you know, should we stop the desktop moving forward because the driver infrastructure isn't there? Or, you know, if we do move forward and more people are using 3D, do we think that it's going to push ATI and NVIDIA to open their code? Discuss.
I don't think it is. I wish it would.
Yeah.
I certainly wish it would, yeah.
Yesterday I spent some time standing outside a guy's house saying, give me money. Do you think if I do it again today, it's going to push him into giving me money.
If there was a huge crowd of you,
yes, if there was a fucking shitload of you stood outside saying, give me money,
he's even more less likely
he's
to leave the house.
He's even less likely to go and move house, isn't he?
I mean, the analogy fails.
Okay, so it's a bad analogy, but it's a good question.
The thing is, if there's a load of you outside his house and you're just shouting and stuff, but by you, the more of you shouting, he gets more money himself, which is the equivalent here, really. Then he will be happy with the situation.
I genuinely
Let's
can't
leave
see.
This analogy alone. Yeah.
I mean, like ATIS, I'd love to see it happen, but I genuinely can't see that NVIDIA and ATI have got any motive to open source the drivers. Because they people say, we want open source drivers, and they go, no, why should we? And people aren't then going to go, well, we won't bloody buy your cards.
So
they want to buy the cards in order to get all the 3D.
Because they want all the bling.
I mean, to be honest, I agree with you.
If people said, no, what we're going to do is, we're going to go and buy Matrox cards instead of ATI cards, because Matrox have got free drivers, which they probably haven't. I've got no idea whether they have or not. But if people said that, then okay, but that requires one set to be free already. Yeah. None of them are.
Cirrus Logic. That's what we need. Cirrus Logic.
Do they open source their drivers?
I'm joking.
Oh, right.
Cirrus Logic. CGA! Bring back CGA.
What about S3? Thing is, right, I mean, what's the alternative, though? I mean, we could, you know, stick with fairly flat, boring, normal VGA or something, 16 colours, woo, and, you know, be quite happy with that.
It's the whole compromising
but,
principles
hang on,
thing.
Yeah, but yes. No, it's not. It's not, because is there not a third way, a Tony Blair on this, where you can...
Matthew, is your third eye open?
It is at the moment, actually, yes. Where you can...
Draft.
where
it's a game to put Matt off.
Surely there's enough momentum within the open source
don't
world.
Don't call me Shirley.
You what?
Don't call me Shirley.
I won't.
leverage.
Right, surely there is enough momentum within the open source world for someone to put some money into developing an open source
something
graphics card.
Yeah.
No. Is it not? I know it costs a lot of money to develop, but...
It doesn't.
People have tried this in the past.
There's the problem right there, because the cost of development.
It doesn't cost a lot of money to develop. It costs a hysterical amount of money to develop, because you've got to build a chip fab plant.
Right, okay. You can't use generic stuff
chip
and then
fat.
Do
Listen,
it.
Dude, no. They can have my chip fat.
I thought they did. I
thought they did fabrication.
I thought a lot of the stuff these days happened in the driver as software, and that's why they're so keen not to give them away.
No. NVIDIA, the point is that there's a lot of really cool stuff in the chips, and then they don't give the drive away, so no one else knows how to talk to the chips to make them do it.
Right.
There is some stuff which happens in software, but a lot of it happens in hardware. I mean, it's not as if the NVIDIA ATI people are doing really, really cool hardware, and they're pushing the edge every day. It's not as if they're sitting on their laurels going, well, we can't be bothered to make better cards.
Question for you then. If XGL comes out for Ubuntu, and it's in the next version, isn't it?
Yeah.
I believe.
It's in Dapper.
Okay.
It's in Dapper.
Who here is happy to give up their principles and use those closed source drivers to get all that 3D goodness?
I bet
every single one of us is.
No, I wouldn't for two reasons.
Chin.
Just shut up, right? The first reason is I don't have a card with 3D drivers.
If you had a card, let's assume you've got a card.
Assume I've got a card.
I keep forgetting you're running a 286.
But you're the one who always goes on about, oh, well, it's hardware, it's different. And so if all it is a
this
bit
is
of software
very
that lets
true.
You use the hardware.
That's very true, what
no,
you're saying.
No, it's driver.
Oh, but for fuck's sake, that's splitting hairs, really, because there's
totally
software running.
No, it is.
BIOS? That's software running on
it's
hardware.
It's funny how you're really principled in one area and then just not in others.
Yeah, and what about, you know, Windows at work and everything?
Yes, I agree with you, and I'd love to do it. I'd love to get a job that left me with free, where I work with free software at work, but in practice, there are.
Principles step above that, don't
there? There are no jobs in free software.
Not near me that I can do, no, there are.
Oh, right.
Bring me back, though,
I agree with you. Yes, I'm compromising there. I don't like it, but I do. But I don't have the option to not compromise.
We've had this conversation.
I do have the option to not compromise by not having 3D graphics.
Everybody's
we've had this conversation before, though.
Yeah.
I'm interested to know why...
Bring us back in, Matt.
Why it's different to run a proprietary BIOS on your hardware... to running another bit of software on your hardware that lets you access another bit of hardware.
Can I run a non-proprietary BIOS?
Yes. I don't know.
Right, if I run a non-proprietary BIOS, will you go, oh, okay, then you do have principles after all?
No, because
no,
I think
you're
it's
still
all silly
things
anyway.
To accuse me for.
Well, yeah, because
it's
you're so...
It's because you have very, very black and white principles that you don't actually hold. That's the point.
Which bits don't I hold?
Because it's when you're talking about free software and on Log Radio, a lot of the time you're basically saying it's free software and that's the only way.
Yeah.
Yet, to be honest, it's like Mako's essay, you know, at the end of the day, you've got to stick to your principles.
You've got to give some stuff up, which is what I'm prepared to do. I've just said I'm prepared to give up flashy 3D graphics in order to stick by my free software principles, and you don't believe me.
But the thing is, though, is that what we...
And I am prepared to do exactly that.
Yeah.
This is me sticking by my principles and you having a go at me for sticking by my principles.
No, I actually believe that you would give up 3D graphics.
Yeah, I would, though.
The thing is, only 12 months ago, you were using Mutt or something, so I don't think graphics are that important to you.
The thing is, I mean, I agree that, you know, in terms of the 3D thing, it's unlikely that ATI and NVIDIA are going to create open source drivers. So do we think it's a good thing that it's going to actually pressurize the...
The
developers who are working on the ATI and NVIDIA open source drivers, because the impression I get is that they're doing as best a job as they can at the moment.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So how much further can they go? And it's a real quagmire because everybody wants all this 3D
stuff.
It's
such a pain to have to reverse engineer all this stuff. And to be honest,
it takes money, basically. They'd have to be paid to do it so they can do it all
day long. And to be
honest,
the thing is that...
World get it?
If you read something like, if you read the Fedora forums or the Gentoo forums, well, not so much the Gentoo forums, or the Ubuntu forums, more and more people are using...
By the way, how often are you on any of them apart from Ubuntu?
No, I use the Fedora forums.
Chin.
I do.
Anyway,
I do.
The point I'm making
is that if you read the Fedora forums or the Ubuntu forums or whatever, more and more people are using the closed source drivers.
Yes.
And I suspect that people want eye candy more than they are willing to sacrifice their beliefs.
I want candy.
And that's the reason why, as we've discussed in the past, so many people have moved over to Mac OS X, and that's the reason why so many people are using the 3D drivers. So we're in a position now where the only way forward is to make the open source drivers better. And that's the difficulty.
But it's not, though, because if people are willing just to go with the proprietary drivers anyway, you can't ship the proprietary drivers.
In distributions.
Okay.
That's the problem.
All right.
That's not the only problem.
Oh, no, no. That's the main problem in terms of users for the main...
My major quandary about this is I think all this this XGL stuff is basically vital to the future of the Linux desktop.
Yeah.
I think it's absolutely vital to it, but I really, really, really don't want to see... us just basically sell out all the principles in order to get flash eye candy and keep up with our opposing operating systems.
Do you know what? There are very few people who use Linux, I reckon anyway, who have the same principles that you have.
I agree.
Or that I have, or that either you two have.
Yeah. I agree.
And we are in a minority.
That is demonstrable because, I mean, I wrote an article for NewsForge, right? Just a little crappy one, right? About TurboCache coming out.
A good one.
Development starting for Linux, yeah? And a lot of the comments that were on that were saying, oh, there's already accountancy software for Linux. And I had to keep writing in the comments back saying, no, I'm talking about free software, not Linux. And I'm not as much of a free software person as you, but my article was about there being... article was about there being the possibility now of running your business on free software and not having such proprietary software because a vital bit of the mix was there. But nobody seemed to get that who read the article. They kept saying, oh, but you can use this and it costs $5,000. No, I'm talking about free software.
I know.
And when you talk about free software, so many people also think that you're talking about... free as in gratis.
Sugar.
Whereas, I mean, the
big thing there is that tension between the two things, because I believe that it's because of the fact that it is free software that we have a Linux. And if you sell out 5 years from now, it'll all be proprietary and then it'll all be gone.
Possibly.
I'm still, you know, quite alone in that Gentle. View, I think. I'm very much down towards the far end. But I think it's the beginning of a slippery slope if you start saying, in order to make Linux work, we have to depend on this proprietary.
But again, it's a balance, isn't it? I'm firmly of the belief that it's a balance and
you're not going to start talking about the wheel of life, are you?
No. and we can, you know... Yang. I don't think anything's black and white. And
Yin and Yang is.
The problem we've got here is that we can't have all of this XGL stuff and have free drivers.
Can't have your cake and eat it.
At the moment. And that's a real sticking point. Everyone's saying, yeah, isn't all this stuff great, but until we have the free drivers, we can't have it on a free software desktop.
What percentage of people, though, do you think are going to say, well, I could have XGL, but, you know...
It will never ship as a default in Ubuntu.
I know it won't, but everybody will still go and get it.
But that's the point, is that
there'll be like 1% of people who will stick by the principles.
But you've got to be technically minded to install the driver. The point I'm making is that when you get
there'll be a how-to.
Ideally, when you get Ubuntu or Fedora out the box,
it should work
if you've got the hardware.
Uh huh.
And so that's then
it's down to the distributions then to write the NVIDIA drivers.
Well, maybe the distros could club together to help reverse engineer the drivers. Yeah, maybe.
I suspect people are doing that, but it's bloody hard work.
At least it's going to bring the focus maybe to the driver development, because people are just doing more 3D.
We need an open source graphics card.
Well, that's what I said about 10 minutes ago, and everyone knew.
That's what we need.
No, because it takes unlimited money. Yeah. I mean, I think the part of the point before is that people are saying, we want open source NVIDIA drivers, and the NVIDIA people are thinking, people hacking on thinking, well, yeah, we want to do this because we believe in free software, but we're basically doing it so you lot can play closed source games. Whereas now, people are trying to do a real open source thing.
And therefore, you're actually helping
propagate open source by developing the open source driver, not helping people play some bloody Windows game with Stiga. Yeah.
Right, it's the end of the show. Time for some emails and a few voicemails. Yep. We've had shed loads of emails. I'm sorry we don't have time to read them all, so we're just going to limit ourselves to two each.
I know. We're keeping it down this week.
Shall I kick off then? Right, okay.
Get down!
Tim Iverson writes in, and he said that you said in Season 3, Episode 9, that Mozilla doesn't support opening MHT files. This is something that you talked about, Ack.
It was.
However, there is a Firefox extension that opens MHT files. It's available from http://maf.mozdev.org, and it's GPL'd. I'm not sure how typical that is for a Firefox extension. Perhaps it's not what you had in mind, but it seems to work.
Wicked.
That's probably good work. He says there that it opens them, but it doesn't say whether it saves them.
Well, that's
your point.
Well,
wasn't
no,
it?
I mean, I'm a bit less bothered about saving. The point was that it made.
Surely the saving is more important.
Well, possibly, but I gave it as an example of a way of having a cross browser saveable format.
Yeah. Time limit, boys. Time limit.
Okay, thank you. Next.
Oh, I'm going next.
No commentary on any emails, apparently. Just read them out and then shut up.
Read them out, shut up. Just get on with it.
That's been like my dad at the minute.
Right, this is from John Small, aka Jack Large. I don't know. Dear Log Radio presenters, was just listening to the last episode of your jolly nice show, Season 3, Episode 9, and thought how it made me feel like I was in the pub with a group of slightly deranged friends.
Hey.
It has all the benefits and none of the disadvantages, such as hangovers, increasing the overdraft, and trying to find the station in the rain while you're off your face.
It's a podcast.
However,
station.
I thought of a way to make it even better. Crack open a beer while listening. Yep. All I need now is to give the computer room a pub-like makeover, and it'll be perfect.
There you go.
We'll try to get to the mighty, mighty Lug Radio Live. I added the mighty, mighty. So we'll try to get to the Lug Radio Live 2006, as work deprived me of last year's event. Just think real live geeks to drink with. I can hardly wait. Although the wife and child may have something to say about it.
For the pub atmosphere, he needs urinal cakes.
Urinal cakes, yeah. Nice. Bog mints.
Are they yellow when they go in, or are they
bog mints. That's Uncle Jono's advice to you all.
Uncle Jono. I've got a mail here from someone called Digital Death.
Digital Death is the dude.
Right. Digital Death has written into the show.
Yeah, I don't know whether his mum calls him Dig or something like that.
Baby Death.
Yes, okay.
Death, your tea's ready.
I don't want it. Mr. Death. He says, great show, guys, but sometimes you guys can really suck donkey's bollocks.
We know.
What the fuck was that shite you were talking about regarding games development? You should get up off your own fucking asses and do something about it if you're not fucking happy. Wankers.
I'm not going
there's no market because you're quite content with fucking E.T., which assumes enemy territory, and think it's the best thing since sliced bread. Now, I'm going to step out of the abuse here for a minute and say I don't think E.T.'s the best thing since sliced bread. I think it's fucking shite. The point he makes is, he says, get out there and get helping with the Linux port of the Torque game engine. Because, yes, what we need is more fucking game engines. No actual games, just fucking game engines.
No to frameworks.
Fuck off, Digital Death. Just say no to frameworks.
No to frameworks.
Bloke makes a bit of a point, which was that if we want more games, we should get out there and help with open source ones.
But I don't want more games.
The biggest problem, which you guys barely touched on, was the actual art and media creation tools.
We went on about that.
No, we went on about how we need art, not
tools.
about the tools. Blender is both hype and shite, so don't even mention it. Well, okay, presumably while we're hacking on games that we don't want to play, you'll be hacking on 3DStudioMax.open, which you don't want to use. Fuck off. No, Bloke makes a very good point.
Postscript.
And he says, you guys rock, really, and I'm just messing about kicking the shit out of you, so rock on, guys. Rock on digital death.
I saw him
rock,
in the IRC channel, and he said, did you get my email? And I said, yes, you bastard. And he was like, no, I was only joking. I was like, nah.
Yeah, you just wait. We're looking forward to you coming to Lug Radio Live. We really are, because we're going to have a big event where we tie a guy in a sack and everyone beats the shit out of him.
He's coming from Ireland.
Death hangs around in the IRC.
Yeah, he's coming from Ireland.
We are that late.
He's travelling from Ireland with a pig under his arm.
My name's Digital Death.
We're looking forward to seeing you.
I remember him from
there. Come and play with me, Lucky Charles. Uh-huh.
No discussion. Moving
Sorry.
On.
Sorry.
Right. Campbell J. Barton, who sounds like a character from the OC.
No, I'll cookie again.
Camel Toe Barton.
That's the one. Yep. He says, hey guys, last episode my girlfriend listened to the whole thing, lured by Adam Sweet's deep voice. Get him back, he has to be a good thing for women in Linux.
All right, so, love, all right, I'm going to kiss you all night. You're my sweet thing.
I used to be in a band, don't you know?
I don't want to disappoint you here, mate, but I wouldn't take your girlfriend anywhere near Adam if I was you.
Right, moving on, we got an email Boundary. From John Hyton, H-I-G-T-O-N. I guess
don't spell it, just read it.
Sorry, Matthew. just listening to Season 3, Episode 9. Seems like everyone's been listening to that one.
Wankers.
And your segment about Linux games. Something that you didn't mention, which addresses the ideas about Linux is technically capable of running games, is the fact that Doom 3 was ported to Linux and ran perfectly well on many distros. Also, the closer equivalent to have DirectX is probably SDL, not OpenGL, as SDL does graphics and sound, and was indeed used by Loki before they sank. Sorry for the nitpicking. Great show. Thanks, Joe.
Okay. No, absolutely fair play. You made the point. Yeah, totally. quite a few other people.
We agree. Well, over played. To Jono.
We had loads of things about games, by the way. Loads of emails. So thank you for
that. A lot of people are interested in the concept of games. Yeah. Digital Death points out that not many people actually go out and buy any games with real money.
Yeah.
Which is a good point.
Pascal points out that there are lots of artists and we should just go and find them. They're all hanging around.
As in the language or person, Pascal?
Just Pascal.
Yeah, it was Blaise Pascal from Beyond the Grey.
Actually, it was Delphi.
So,
Kylix.
I had an email from Ben Morris saying, hi, the comment fuck me gently with a chainsaw is in arch/spark/kernel/ptrace.c.
Yeah, I read
the Linux
that.
Kernel source tree. On Linux 2.6.12 with Gentoo patches anyway. Gentoo patches?
Really?
I knew that. Yeah. I wonder if some distros like to patch the swearing in the kernel source. He says, on
Emerge
another topic.
Swear.
Jesus, Nick.
He's had odd MP3 timings, so I think that's all been sorted out.
But download the CBR.
CBR version.
Constant bitrate.
Constant bitrate.
We got a very short email here from Ba. or it might be Ba.
Sucker.
At nerdxcore.net, and he says, hey, sucker. I pity Dafu who disrespect a member of our team. PS Audio money. Message touched.
Let's listen to that message.
Hey, guys, this is Ba. You guys got my email, and this is a message that I have for the open source community.
You heard the man, sucker. We're a team. We go out together.
Thanks, guys. Love the show. Keep up the good work.
One money.
Quality.
That is quality. Matthew.
Yonkletron official show stalker says, as mentioned on the forums, and then he gives a URL, and my blog, you can now get randomized Lug Radio bingo boards for use when listening to the show. You can pick them up at www.bluefacemonkey.com/lugradio. Perfect for parties, weddings, orgies, and bar mitzvahs.
Fantastic.
Not really sure what that is, but good, go for it. Bluefacemonkey.com/lugradio.
I saw his bingo thing. It's pretty cool.
Is it? Yeah. I haven't had a chance to look
at it. It is quality.
I was thinking we should maybe employ it at Lug Radio Live.
Yay!
Should we talk about Lug Radio Live?
Let's do just that.
Right.
What a very neat and seamless segue that was, John.
Well, you know, professionalism. You start talking, I'm going to bring up the details on the computer.
Okay. Well, here we go.
Lug Radio Live. You've heard us talk about it before. Lug Radio Live 2005.
You may even have come to one before.
And you may even have come to Lug Radio Live 2005. If you went there, it's nothing compared to how cool this one is going to be.
We
are currently in the process of confirming lots and lots of speakers, and we're going to read some of those out. We've got loads of other really cool ideas.
Oh,
one of the major ones is BOFs, Birds of a Feather sessions.
Yep.
If you're part of a project You're likely to have not met anyone else working on that project, what with open source being the way it is. So come to Lug Radio Live, get together with a group of people who are also working on that project, drink some beer, talk about some stuff, see some talks, drink some more beer.
It's going
watch
to be,
Lug Radio Live at Unleashed.
It's going to be unbelievable. Should we go through the speakers list so
let's
far?
Let's do it, let's do it.
I'm going to run through this quickly. We've got Steve Coast from OpenStreetMap.
OpenCoastalMap.
Jen and Fated are going to be talking about women in open source.
Ooh. Hang on a second, there's women in open source?
Exactly. And one
that's all of them, all three.
Oh, right. Edward Hervey is travelling over from Barcelona to talk about Pitavi. Scott James Remnant, who's
three-shot Remnant.
He's going to be talking about Ubuntu. Apparently, he dropped a microphone on someone's head at the last show. Yes. Barbie is coming down to talk about Message Labs and Perl.
Hey.
And good shoes.
The lovely Sarah Ewan.
Sarah Ewan, Linux on PlayStation 2. Michael Meeks is talking about OpenOffice. Textbox Garrett is the latest Textbox. That's Matthew Garrett. He's coming to talk about Linux on laptops. Matthew Garrett's Angry Menace, as Remnant wants to call it. The mighty John Leach is talking about Everybody Loves Eric Raymond, which we all
adore.
Oh,
he's going to talk about that.
Yep. Elliot Smith is Ruby on Rails dude. He's coming to talk about Ruby on Rails. Paul Cooper is coming down to talk. He's my boss.
Who's
he's
he?
Going to talk about something. It's unconfirmed.
Oh, right.
He's my boss.
So you've given him a spot.
I've written
just
down,
because he's your boss.
Well, you know, he
he's not told you what he's going to talk about. You just give him a spot. Yeah?
He bought my gold yacht. So I mean, so my
as long as it's yacht shaped, it'll float.
Exactly. Tom Steinberg is coming to talk about My Society and Pledge Bank. Ewan Spence, the most insane Scotsman that's ever lived, is coming to talk about TBC.
To be continued.
To be confirmed.
To be continued. Christine Schaller is also coming from Barcelona.
Christine Schaller,
G-streamer,
fellow paintballer.
Martin van der Streek is coming to talk about Ubuntu. He's travelling over from
Holland.
What?
Is he in Gemba, Holland? That's what he said.
He's a Gimba.
No, Gemba.
He's Gimp.
Dutch for German. I figured in
Martin Gemba Streek.
Yeah, that's
is he
it.
Is he in Holland?
Somewhere like that. Ian Lynch is talking about Open Document. Dutch. Alex Hudson is talking about Hula. Martin Vogel is talking about the BBC Action Network.
Rice and pee.
Trisha. Yeah. Obviously. we've got Matthew. The big man Block. Matthew Block. Will Matthew Block please stand up? Matthew Block is coming to talk about virtualization and bite mark. Jonathan Riddell is coming for a Piddell and to talk about KD4 and Kubuntu Dapper 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 Dapper. Bruno Board is coming to talk about how much we swear in Lug Radio.
You may have just heard him singing Happy Birthday to us.
Yes. No.
Not yet.
We haven't played that yet.
/ me. He's upset.
Mirko the Yogurt Muller is coming to talk about low fat, a natural way to view your files with a twist. We've still got over 12 speakers to confirm.
Over 12? Is that 13?
Could be 13.
And we could have another track.
It's actually
going to
be something like another 18.
We could put another track on if we really need to.
We could do.
That's
because it's
over more than one day.
2 days, 22nd and the 23rd of July.
The key point is there, you've seen, there are quite a few people there coming from Europe, and we'd love to see more of you coming from outside the UK. Wolverhampton is cheap to stay in, and flying here is cheap. Yep. Come to Lug Radio Live. We really, really want to see
come
you.
And visit
really,
Europe.
Yeah.
You Americans.
And I tell you what, you're going to have an experience, so it'll be both fun and informative.
Yeah. The thing is that if you're worried about how much it's going to cost to come over, like we say, it's cheap.
Yeah, you only live once. Come on.
The hotel, we've got an official hotel where the rooms are heavily discounted. It's £27.50 a night.
Exactly, that's nothing.
For a single room and £55 for a double room.
Just keep your shoes on.
It's going to be absolutely brilliant. So
flights are cheap here as well to Birmingham.
Yes, we've got an airport nearby, and there's a train station inside
the
airport.
Not one of those airports.
Or, you know, get nine of you in a minibus. Drive
from
speaking
America.
Speaking of buses.
Not from America. From Europe.
Buses. Let's talk
you just wind the windows up and you drive under the Atlantic 4,000 miles.
Like you go over the Bering Straits and then across Siberia.
If you drive fast enough, it'll be like a stone. Is
if
that
you,
the way it works?
That look good on radio. If you skip a minibus, I'll buy you the minibus out of my own pocket.
Superman could do that.
The thing is, you can afford it.
When you even buy me a beer, that'll be an event.
Shut the fuck up.
So, yeah, there's a bus that's been laid on in the UK that's travelling from the north to the south.
Two buses.
From the north to Wolverhampton and from the south. A lot of people have asked where Wolverhampton is in relation to London when I've spoken to people on IRC.
2 hours away by train.
Yeah, we're in the middle of the country, so...
Well...
Around the middle.
We're in the middle of England, kind of, not even that really.
Which is the important part of the country.
Yeah. We're just next to Wales.
Just ignore Wales.
There's going to be loads more things than just speakers as well. We've got two Lightning Talks tracks and a main stage track.
And the boss. Yes.
And we've got the boss. We want to hear about your boss. There's going to be loads of cool things which we're not going to tell you about.
There'll be topless barmaids.
Yeah. There will not be any topless barmaids.
No, really? Oh, wouldn't they come?
There won't be any topless barmaids.
Sponsored by Hooters.
Hey,
yeah. Well, the Hooters project. The important thing to stress here as Frame well is that if you want to be involved, if you want to help out, if you are part of an open source project and you want to have an exhibition or you're interested in doing a talk,
just get involved.
And the boffs like access are really important. Speak to Aid about the boffs if you're interested in doing it, because we really want to say.
You can speak to me on the day.
Eh?
Speak to me on the day.
Well,
beforehand, it'd be better.
We can plan some.
Okay.
We've got three boff points.
Ooh. I can't be at all three.
You can't.
No. Not even me.
But let us know what you're going to run and then put the word out to your communities that you're going to run it. In the same way, we've got a big exhibition, so you can run a stand. Matt can talk to you about that now.
Yep. Last year, we had a fantastic big exhibition area, two exhibition areas where we had
big
people like, well, it was big enough. We had a Red Hat there, we had Open Office, Ubuntu, all sorts of people. Debian had a massive stand. Linspire. And basically, what we're doing is if you are an open source project or company, or you're just someone who you think you can offer something good to our people who are coming, then we'll give you a free stand. If you can give us some money towards expenses, that would be appreciated, but it's not at all required. Not at all. I mean, we really want to emphasise that. Show at logradio.org, tell us, and I'll sort you out with a space.
Those of you who came last year as well, the exhibition space this year, the entire venue this year is a lot bigger.
Oh, mate.
We're going to have a lot more room to do an exhibition. Because last year, we...
You still need to let us know, though.
Yeah, you've got to let us know. We've got to plan it in advance. So, and
spaces will get used up.
And yeah, I mean, if you, it doesn't matter
first
the size of your project.
First served.
So it's going to be great. We've got loads of stuff going on. It's going to be an unbelievable event.
The other thing is, if you're coming and you've got mates who aren't coming, make them fucking come. Go and talk
lazy
to your
friends.
Tell them that they need to come as well.
Bring your young lady with you as well.
Because it's going to be great. Yep. Just think how sad it'll be for them when you go back and go, oh, I had a brilliant weekend at Lug Radio Live and you didn't get to go.
Yeah.
Don't disappoint your friends like that. Bring them with you.
Now, like every time I miss the Marillion weekend.
Now, there'll be more
people at Lug Radio Live.
We've got a large community of people who listen to the show regularly, and we appreciate this. And what we need to do for Lug Radio Live is we really need to push. We need to let everybody know about it. So blog about it. Mention it on forums. Tell everybody about it. Link to lugradio.org/live. That's where they need to go to check it out and all the latest details.
Yep.
So really, it's a community effort. It's a community event. Tell everybody about it. Blog about it. Just do everything you can to inform the world about this fantastic
event. We need some of those little images to put on our websites.
They are in production. Badges.
Fantastic.
And someone actually added some to the forums today.
Ooh.
Oh,
so
cool. I haven't seen that. I mean, I have. There are
forums.lugradio.org.
There are quite a few things that we need in terms of technology, bits of software that we'd like to use at the event,
and hardware,
banners and buttons and so on that we'd like to use to publicise the event. And we'd love your help putting those things together. I posted a couple of lists to the forums of things that people can be helping with right now, even this early before the event. So if you want to get involved with that kind of thing, go along to forums.lugradio.org, look in the Lug Radio Live for them.
Yes, indeed.
It is going to be absolutely the open source / Linux event of the year.
It is, it's going to be incredible.
Nothing will compare.
And again, bear in mind that we haven't even confirmed, and we've still got 12, 14 speakers.
We haven't even got started.
Yeah. As you said, old Fippo might be coming as well.
Yeah, well, exactly. So we've got some big names that we've contacted who we're awaiting any confirmation from and things like that. So, and importantly, from the next episode, we are going to have the ability for you to buy tickets.
Hooray!
We will be doing the old, we'll be doing the concessions thing again this year.
Yep, booking your tickets, yeah.
Yes, certainly. So you can book your tickets, you can get everything sorted out.
Being as I'm sorting out the banking for the tickets.
Well, Matt will sort it out.
Hooray! It may not be
the way things get done on Lug Radio is that one of us says, we're going to do this on air.
And then it actually happens.
And then it happens.
Yeah. So the concessions
thing... I've
got to
get the merchant account up and running first.
For those of you who didn't come last year or couldn't make it last year, the way the concessions thing works is if you can come up with any plausible reason at all why you should get a concession, then you'll get a concession and get in for less. But
and it's a pretty loose rule.
Out on air. Yeah.
But when you turn up on the day and moan about the fact that you're a student like a couple of people did...
You pay full price.
Yeah.
Tell us beforehand... and give us an excuse we can mock you for. You get in for nothing.
Exactly.
Well, you don't get in for nothing. You get in for concession price.
Oh, yeah.
But one guy...
How many concessions did we turn down last year? That'll be none.
Exactly. Well, that's true.
We had some ridiculous ones.
One guy managed to get a concession from driving all the way from Wales to Lug Radio Live with a guy with a square head.
His concession was he had a friend with a square head. And he's still qualified.
International visit is free?
International visitors are free. Totally.
Did we even measure the squareness of his head?
No, we made him stand up and pointed at him and laugh.
I think he's on video as well, isn't he?
It is on video.
He's on the, if you go to the lugradio.org/live/2005.
So don't be shy in asking for a concession.
So just basically ramble about anything in an email and you're going to get it. So,
And if you don't come, you will miss out because we won't be posting the files online probably for a very long time.
What are you trying to say, Matthew?
Nothing at all.
So
let's wrap it up then.
Okay, guys, it's been great. I've enjoyed it.
Happy birthday. Yeah.
Oh, same to you, mate.
Happy birthday to us.
And many happy returns.
Another 2 years.
We love you guys.
We do. And thank you very much. So, goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.